Hi, everybody. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. By God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am eternally grateful. And I have a home group, and that's Monday night Seal Beach Speakers Meeting, and I have a sponsor, and that's Dottie Harris, and I'm really grateful that I have those things in my life. I just, those are the things I need in order to have, to be an active member in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just want to thank John and Lou Ann for inviting us to come. This has been really neat. And I was especially excited after I did the women's retreat in Ogden, because while I was at the women's retreat, several of the women said, "Oh, we're going to see you at the couples retreat." And that's really neat. So I've been reacquainting myself with the people that I met there. I'd also like to let you know I'm a very sick alcoholic with the flu. So I got off the airplane and I told Lou Ann, I said, "God," I said, it never fails. You know, you're going to go somewhere, you're going to do something, and then along comes this a really crummy summer cold, and it's like just makes you just kind of feel a little wrung out. Dave and I kind of talked with John and Lou Ann about how we'd kind of do this weekend. And what we decided we'd do is that tonight maybe we'll find, I don't know whether we want to do it. Do you want to do that first or do you want me to talk first? That we kind of let everybody, you know, say who they are and, you know, introduce yourselves and where you're from. And then I'll talk. But kind of get to know a little bit about you. And then we'll do the workshops tomorrow. And Dave will talk tomorrow night. And then I'm going to do a kind of a 12-step meditation. The women who were at Ogden have already participated in this. And so on Sunday, Dave and I have to leave because we have to catch a plane. But those of you who would like to participate, if you'll bring some paper and pencil, I think you'll be in for a really nice experience that if you want to do that. So that's kind of the little loose-knit agenda, and I love this. I said when we got here and John was telling us all this, I said, "Oh, God, you guys are really laid back." So that's really neat. So how do you want to do it? You want to do the, like, go around the room first? Yeah, so everybody knows everybody. I think we'd like to do that first. Don, is that going to mess up your taping if we just, you can cut off and in however you want to, huh? Okay. So, yeah, that's the way I like it. Let's just, it was like I never go to the podium and speak unless I'm in a dress and stuff like that, unless I'm at a retreat, so I'm in pants, you know, and just like lay back and enjoy yourself and just be at a retreat. This is really nice. So why don't we just go around the room and everybody just say, you know, what your names and where you're from and maybe how many of these you've been to before and or anything else you feel like saying. Great. Okay, well, I'm going to try to share with you tonight. Excuse me, what? Oh, I guess I should introduce you, huh? Sorry about that, honey. See, it's already. I'm already. Oh, shoot.
I get the same treatment. Well, I was going to tell you how wonderful she is, but. My name is Dave Pistol, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 18, 1976. My home group is the Seal Beach Monday Night Speakers Meeting. I have a sponsor. His name is Frank Honeycutt. And I cannot tell you how grateful I am to you to invite Polly and I here for this weekend, because Salt Lake City played a very significant role in my sobriety. I moved to Salt Lake City when I had 5 months of sobriety in 1976, and you know, have a lot of dear friends here, some of whom have died, and I just had a wonderful time going to meetings here. I moved here, I didn't know anybody, I didn't know anything. I came out of Texas AA, which is quite different from here in some ways. And I wound up at the Alamo Club down on 3rd West around 53rd South. I don't remember the exact address. And there was an old fellow down there by the name of David Ace who took me under his wing. And David and I were David had a lot of friends, but I was counted myself fortunate to be one of them. I loved that guy a lot. He was a kind of a cantankerous guy. Those of you who knew David know that. He liked to be kind of gruff and all. But I never heard anybody ask for help, and I never heard David say no. There was another guy from Richfield by the name of Clay Monk. He and David used to go together all the time. And it was great. Clay's in Florida now. And I was here when Fellowship Hall got started. I don't even know if it's still here. Is it still going? Over by the ballpark. And oh, it's moved. I was here when that got started, and I went to meetings in Sandy and Murray and Kearns, everywhere, just all over the valley. And one of my favorite meetings was a Sunday morning breakfast meeting down at the Alamo Club. I was down there every Sunday morning, and some of the people I remember was a lady named Belva, who was a dear friend of mine, and she and I used to go up to Ogden to meetings once in a while. Bob Williams, Don Williams, Bill Williams, another guy. He's still here, I know, because I've seen him a couple of years ago. Saw him, and just all the wonderful people. Leo Harney was a friend of mine. I was here when Leo came in. I was going to meetings here when Leo came in day A, and just love him dearly. And there's a guy named Bob, and I remember this guy named Bob. I can't remember his last name, but one year before he got sober, they had the Temple Square, of course, decorated for Christmas, and that big blue spruce on the South Temple side there. He decided he'd have some fun. He was down there at Temple Square, took his family to see all the decorations, and he was drunk, and he climbed that blue spruce, and he was dropping the decorations down on the sidewalk. I have a lot of really fond, dear memories of the time I got to go to AA in Salt Lake City around here. It was really great. I was so grateful I get to come back and see all you guys. Thank you very much. Bill will be super.
Well, he's going to be here?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah, Davis is talking about all the people who, when he came. Well, you've been here twice, two different times. Yeah. So, and AA here, so it's great. Okay. So back to where the story stuff. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm going to share with you my experience, strength, and hope. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that I should share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like today. I'm really sorry that I have such a cold and that I'm so nasally. And if you can't hear me, just go to sleep. It's all right. And I'm one of these kind, if I don't get done before you get done, that's okay. You know, it's... I'll try not to talk too long, so, but it's just be at ease. That's what, it's wonderful to have a retreat, and, you know, couples get together, because marriage is tough. It's really tough, and especially when you put all our stuff together, you know, by the time you bring in all the baggage that alcoholics and Al-Anons have, and if you've been married the whole time, then you've got the baggage, and so you have to work through all that. And then if you're like Dave and I, you get married and you bring all the baggage with you, so you somehow have to get through all the baggage. So it's really neat that we have these programs and that we have each other, that you can show us how you did it and we show you how we did it. And I love to hear about the couples meetings that all of you are going to, because that's great. Dave and I, we do a couples meeting as well, but ours is once a month, and it travels from each other's house, and it's so fun. We have a potluck, and then we have a meeting, and it's just amazing some of the things that we've all worked through in this couples meeting, and it's like the highlight of our month to be able to participate in this couples meeting, because it's Alkies hooked together, and it's Al-Anons and Al-Anons and Alkies and Al-Anons, so it's just whatever gets here hooked up together and trying to make it. And that's what we're all trying to do. We're just trying to take people who are Hopeless is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know I saw it a minute ago. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous calls people like you and me hopeless of mind and body. So here you take a hopeless lot of people, hopeless. You give us a set of instructions in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We share with each other our experience, strength, and hope, and we make it. And listen, all the people are talking about having kids. It's like, I love to hear so about sober babies, because some of us didn't get to do that, didn't get to have the sober babies. And believe me, you know, those of you who come out of alcoholic homes and those of you who've had to watch your children suffer from the disease of alcoholism and the effects of the disease of alcoholism, it's really a tough deal. And it's really neat to see, you know, young people bringing up sober kids. And that's the marvel. And then it's really good to see us be able to get in here and be able to take the actions to start to put the families back together. And healing begins to take place. And it's a total miracle. And you know, you really don't get to see it in many places other than in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that we get to put our lives back together. And you know, we get to laugh about, we were with, met John and Luann, and Dave says, well, you know, I've had a lot of wives. And he says, you know, it's kind of like you get talking about it. And Luann says, well, John's not my first husband. And John says, Luann's not my only wife either. So, you know, we get to start sharing about how many times we've been married and, you know, all the things that we've done. But it's really nice when we can talk about how we stayed married. Just like we stay sober, we just stay married no matter what. And that's where Dave and I are at. We just stay married no matter what. And we've made a commitment to our marriage, just like we've made a commitment to sobriety. And by doing that, we found out that you can get through anything if you just don't leave no matter what. And that's just, you know, everything else probably goes. I mean, I'm not talking about you can't hurt each other and you can't have affairs and stuff like that. But, I mean, we don't, you know, we've called each other a bunch of dirty old names and we've done a bunch of stuff. But all that can go, but you don't get to leave. That's the only thing you don't get to do is you don't get to leave. And so far, that's been, you know, that's been the ticket for us. And I'm really grateful that we just weren't going to do it anymore. We just weren't going to do it anymore. And I'm grateful for that. I'm a person who does not come from an alcoholic home. I have the disease of alcoholism, and I do not come from the disease of alcoholism. So it's not a prerequisite for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not a prerequisite to have the disease of alcoholism. My parents do not have it. My daddy died when he was 60 years old. He had 60 years of sobriety. My mother is 80. She has 80 years of sobriety. She has not the least bit, you know, she just is not the least bit impressed with my 21 years of sobriety. She just, her deal is if you just never drank, none of those things would have happened to you. What I've learned here is about the feelings of an alcoholic. And I have the opportunity, I'm so blessed in this program, I get to work with a lot of women in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've listened to four steps and fifth steps, and I've heard things happen to women that should never happen to little girls. Some really horrific background. And that has not happened to me. I am not a product of child abuse. My husband is, but I'm not. And if there was anything that was ever happened to me, is I was loved too much. I am a loved, indulged, only child. So none of that's my background. But I have these feelings. And I could walk into a room as a brand new newcomer and sit down next to a woman who has had this horrific background. And that woman feels like nobody loves her and she isn't worth anything and nobody's going to love her no matter what. And I felt the same way. I felt like nobody loved me. I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous absolutely convinced that nobody loved me, that I would never measure up to any of the other people in the world, I just had these feelings of absolutely total inadequacy. These feelings of there's just no way that I'll ever, ever be enough. And today I understand why I have those feelings. Because if I get into the big book, and after studying that book, getting into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have found out what my problem is and why I feel that way. Because the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I'm suffering from a spiritual malady. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I am separated from the sunshine of the Spirit. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that if I am suffering from a spiritual malady, nothing is enough. You cannot love a person like me enough. You cannot do enough. You cannot give me enough. For a person like me, an alcoholic like me, there isn't enough. There just isn't enough. You can love me and you can just pour all your love in here, but it goes just into this hole and I can't feel it. And today I understand that the only thing that can make me feel enough and that the only thing that keeps me from having these feelings of inadequacy is the relationship I have today with God. That was what was missing. Now, it's not because I didn't know about God. It wasn't because I wasn't brought up in a church, because I like to make these little jokes, and I know I'm in Mormon country, and I don't want to make any religious jokes, but I am a recovering Southern Baptist. And I was just given a lot of old ideas about God. And somehow or another, it's like, you've heard around here. Now, I don't know if being a Mormon is a prerequisite for alcoholism, but they say being a Southern Baptist and a Catholic is. So I fit into one of them. So I just had these feelings of there's just no way I'm ever going to be good enough for God. And I would have this perception of these ministers and these ministers. And when I was a little girl going to the Baptist church in Texas, those guys got riled up, I'll tell you. And they'd get, they'd slam their fists on the podiums and they would tell you how you're such a sinner and you're going to hell. And they'd get so worked up, their face would just get bright red and their veins were sticking out. And they'd do things like they'd lean into the congregation and they'd say things like, if you've thought it, you've done it. And boy, I don't know about any of you, but I was an alcoholic in the making and I fought a lot. And I just knew that there was no way that God was going to love me. There was no way that God was going to have anything to do with me, because you just had no idea how I thought. And I love this guy in AA. This guy named Sterling. The first time I ever heard him talk, I thought I was going to die, because I think it just is perfect. He says, I don't walk like I talk, but thank God I don't walk like I think. And I'm just like, thank God I don't walk like I think, because this head is in operation constantly. I mean, it is a going machine, and I'm just grateful. I fought then, and I hadn't even had a drink, but I fought a lot. This head was going all the time, and it was never telling me anything good. And they always talked about this God and for what. Now, this is my perception. And those of you who've heard Clancy, and I know Don has this tape of Clancy's called Alcoholism, a Disease of Perception, where Clancy talks about the mind of an alcoholic. The disease is in the mind. It's the thinking. You give me a set of information, it goes in my head, it takes a walk around, and what comes out doesn't even resemble what went in. That's the way, I just got this head. You say something to me, and I just kind of tweak it. And it just doesn't, if I were to say it back to you, you would just be standing there, did I say that? And I can remember my mother saying things, wherever did you get that idea, Polly? Nobody said that to you. And this was just the kind of head I had. And so my perception was that they told me God lived up in the sky. That's where I thought God was, somewhere up in the sky somewhere, way beyond wherever. and that the only way I could get to God was through those people. Now, I don't think they did that. Now, my mother still goes to that church, and I don't think she heard that. But that's what I heard. But I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you talked about God. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that God is deep within. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, search fearlessly for God. And today, God, as I understand him, expresses himself to me through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful that I have found this God. And, you know, I always hated being an only child. Because, you know, they say things about only kids. You know, you were spoiled, you were out of control, all of those kind of things. And I could never stand for anybody to tease me. And I had all these feelings going on. But I want you to know how I feel about God today. I know that God, as I understand him, absolutely loves me to pieces. And he loves me just like if I were his only child. And I know that he loves everybody else. Just like that. And I'm so grateful today that I have that kind of relationship. Now, I also want to tell you about, I don't like to be laughed at and teased. I'm sensitive. I'm sure probably none of you are sensitive, but I'm sensitive. And I don't like to be laughed at and I don't like to be teased. Well, my name is Polly. It's not Pauline or Paula. It's Polly. And if you're a little girl and your name is Polly, you're going to be teased a lot. It's going to be things like Polly wants a cracker and Polly Wally doodle all the day. And I just didn't like to be teased. But what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is there's no negatives in God's world. It's just my perception that's negative. And today I love having the name Polly because I can go into rooms of a lot of alcoholics. And if somebody says Polly, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. There's just not many Pollys in Alcoholics Anonymous. I did know that I was an alcoholic. I knew that I was a drunk, and I knew that I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and I used to pray to God to have heart disease or cancer or something, because I knew that I was dying, and I just wanted to die of something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift, because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I am or hope to be, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, almost 18 years ago, I married Dave. Dave's last name is Pistol. My name is now Polly Pistol. And I will assure you, you cannot walk around on planet Earth with a name like Polly Pistol and not learn to lighten up. So. Dave says, I have made you everything you are. Without that name, nobody would ever remember you. At 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. And I just knew that I had found my knight in shining armor and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. And I had married a SAC pilot. And this man was going to be gone and he was going to be gone for years at a time. And I was going to have to learn to be responsible for myself. Now, I have never wanted to be responsible for myself. I have always wanted somebody else to take care of me. And I don't know. In Texas, we call it puffing up. I don't know if you guys ever know anything about this. You know how when you just kind of puff up and somebody says, what's wrong? Nothing. And then it becomes your responsibility to make me happy. And if you don't make me happy, then I feel rejected. Clancy says that we're people who have to be treated special just to feel average. And if you don't treat us special, then we feel rejected. And that was me. See, I could never suit up and show up for life. I wanted you to make me happy. I wanted it to be your responsibility. I have never wanted to be responsible and accountable for my own life. And I'm so grateful to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because you have made me responsible and accountable for my own actions, and I never wanted to do that. So I didn't want to take responsibility for myself. But lo and behold, I had married this man, and he was going to be gone, and the next thing I know, I have a couple of little kids, and I'm going to have to learn to be responsible. But what happened to me as this 18-year-old girl, there's just no other way to put it, but an 18-year-old girl, I enter the Air Force with this man. Now, here I have these feelings of not being enough, not measuring up, total and complete inadequacy. And now you're going to put me in this place where My perception is these women were elegantly dressed. They had wonderful education. Here I have no education. I don't feel like I can carry on a conversation. I don't feel like I can prepare a meal for 30 people. I was just terrified. And I was just in such an, I was just in constant feelings of inadequacy, and I will never, ever be able to cope with this situation. And somewhere in there, I took a drink of alcohol. I don't really recall when it was. I mean, when you hear Dave talk, he talks about taking a drink of alcohol and then just chasing, you know, going down and then just chasing that feeling, you know, till he came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have that experience. But I can tell you that in the doctor's opinion, it is stated so clearly what alcohol did for me. Alcohol gave me that feeling of ease and comfort. It just seemed like if I took a drink of alcohol, I could walk into these places and I wouldn't be so scared. I could walk into these places and maybe, just maybe, I wouldn't seem so stupid and so inadequate and so uneducated and so not able to carry on a conversation. Those were the feelings that to take a drink of alcohol started to give me. It started to give me just enough to be able to be social. Along about 1962, we're living in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. It's at the very tippy top of Maine, and it's really bitter winters. I bet it's even a bitter, maybe it's as bad as Salt Lake City, or maybe it's worse, I don't know. But it's really cold up there. And I had these two little boys, and I didn't have a clue how to be a parent. Not a clue. I didn't know nothing about parenting. And these two little boys, I couldn't send them out to play. It's 50 below zero. And they're driving me crazy. And I'm having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes. I don't know what to do with these kids. And so I go to an Air Force doctor, and he says, take these. So from 1962 until 1977, when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I drank alcohol, and I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Minutol. And I'm here to tell you, if you take those kind of drugs and drink, you are not an active alcoholic. And I call myself a couch potato alcoholic because I did my dying on my living room sofa. I just laid there and watched soap operas and listened to Joan Baez sing the blues. And it was totally not acceptable for an officer's wife to be drunk and disorderly. So if I went to a cocktail party or if I went to a party, I would go and I would drink, but I don't know if you've ever had to do controlled drinking, but you just, it's like a 4-hour cocktail party can be a lifetime. It's just a lifetime. And I couldn't wait till I got home and I could just drink all I want and pass out. I believe, and this is why I love these kind of things, and I love to be with couples, and I love to be with families who are trying to heal and to come back together again, because I believe that the disease of alcoholism is a family disease. I believe one of the books in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that gets the least attention is the chapter, The Family Afterwards, and where Bill talks about we need to make amends to our family, and we need to mend these relationships, and we need to give these people attention. We need to start repairing these relationships. And I'm so grateful for the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that we can go in there and we can take inventories and we can see our character defects, and then we can take these character defects to God to have them removed. And then we can make a list, and then we can begin the amends. Because to me, the amends begins the freedom. And isn't it amazing that the promises are after the amends step? That we begin to make the amends, and we get that freedom. And these little boys, I have a 5-year-old grandson. He is absolutely adorable. And my little 5-year-old knows nothing but love and attention. And I think about my little 5-year-old and what they were doing because they had a mother who drank alcohol and they had a father who was gone all the time. 5-year-olds who were not even taken care of 5-year-olds who were getting their own food, 5-year-olds who were absolutely having to care for themselves because there was no adult to do that. You know, they don't let people like me have kids today. They don't let women like me take care of little children. Because, you see, I'm a child abuser. I'm a child abuser because I emotionally and physically abuse my children. But the thing that I did most is I blatantly neglected my children. My children were a product of neglect. I sent my sons a message, you're of no value. You're not even worth taking care of. But because of this program and the steps, and I had an AA sponsor, he's in the big meeting in the sky. God, we were talking about that at dinner, all the heroes that have fallen in it, the big meeting in the sky. And we were talking, and Frank's in the big meeting in the sky. And my first AA sponsor was a Monsignor priest who had left the priesthood. God gives you just what you need in order to heal whatever it is you need to heal. And Frank was, he was wonderful. And Frank told me that I had to go to those kids, and I had to make amends. And he says, don't ever forget the second part of the Serenity Prayer, which is the courage to change the things I said. He says, you go to those kids, you be honest with those kids, you tell them that you are a child abuser. And he says, and you don't get to say anything to those boys, but when they tell you how they feel about you, you don't get to say, you shouldn't feel like that. Oh, it really wasn't that bad. That really didn't happen. You're to sit there and let them have their perception of what happened to their life. And you're to only say, I'm so sorry that happened to you. And then by doing that, because the steps work, I have a relationship with those boys today that is beyond anything else. And I know that that would have never happened if it hadn't been for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and those precious, precious 12 steps. I'd just like to tell you what brought me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have any wonderful drunk-a-log stories. I slept through it. I just went out. I ended up having a car wreck in Dallas and Irving, Texas, and I was brought to the police station. I called the police and told them my car was stolen. I mean, we do really crazy things. And my husband was at that police station, and when I called the police, they came and picked me up, and they took me to the Irving police station. And I got to see that look. You know that look on the non-alcoholic face that just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And this man looked at my husband and he said, why don't you just take her home and sober her up? And I entered a county detox that night, and I loved it. And I'll assure you, this was no fancy jitter joint. This is a county detox. But I loved it. And they started taking us to AA meetings. But you know, there's an arrogance that's down inside of this alcoholic. And Dave always talks about, Dr. Tebolt says that there's two characteristics found in every alcoholic. Grandiosity and defiant individuality. And that only an alcoholic can be laying in the gutter feeling superior to those looking down on him. It's like, but what happened to me is here's this arrogant alcoholic. Here I have just been nearly killed in a car wreck. I've totaled an automobile. But I'm sitting in these meetings listening to all these beautiful alcoholics laugh and begin to get some recovery in their life. But down deep inside I'm saying, but people like me don't become alcoholics. I didn't even know an alcoholic. I did not even know an alcoholic in the military. I didn't meet any alcoholics until I came here. I've been to movies and I saw The Days of Wine and Roses. So it's a disease. Anybody can catch it. It has a lot of genetic component. I'm sure that somewhere back there, there's an alcoholic. But I had no experience with alcoholism. And I just couldn't believe this could be happening to me. And while I was in this treatment center, I had a jitter house romance. You know, where sick falls in love with sick, and you walk off into happy destiny. And we walked off into happy destiny for 58 days. And I was brought back into that treatment center, more dead than alive. And I had reached that place in the big book that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because now I know what the problem is. The problem is sobriety. And you see, I've just defined the disease of alcoholism. On that tape, I was telling you that Clancy has alcoholism, a disease of perception. He talks about the disease of alcoholism and how alcohol doesn't have anything to do with the disease of alcoholism. If alcohol were my problem, all I'd have to do is stop drinking. That's all I'd have to do. I wouldn't need to come to these meetings. I'd just have to stop drinking, and I'd be done. But the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that alcohol is but a symptom. I have to get down to the causes and conditions. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says the disease rests in the mind. And you see, I knew that. I knew that. At 58 or however days of sobriety when they brought me back, that I had that day in that treatment center again, in that detox center, I knew. I had been around AA for like 50 or 60 days, and I knew that I could not live sober in my own skin. There was no way. And you know, today I couldn't live sober if it were not for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't stand it. I can't stand to be in my skin without some kind of relief. But thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps, that's what gives me the relief. And I knew it then that I could not live sober. So I left that treatment center, and I got a bottle of scotch and a bottle of Valium, and I checked into a motel. And on April the 8th of 1977, I had a friend who loved me. And she said that day that something came over her, and that something was God working in my life through her. And she drove around, so she found my car parked outside this motel. And I hadn't shut the door all the way, and she pushed it open, and she found me laying there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Dexter, Texas. I love this guy. I don't know if you've ever heard Kip C. talk. Kip is a hoot, and I mean, he's got a story beyond any kind of story I've ever heard. I mean, it's like this guy has lived 15 lives in one man's lifetime. And we talk about high bottoms and low bottoms. But he says, when you're dead, you're dead. You don't go any lower than that. And I used to say I was a high bottom drunk, and he says, you're not a high bottom drunk. If you're dead, that's it. You don't go any lower. So I guess I'm a low bottom drunk. And I was, what happened was is that in 1977, the state of Texas did not take kindly to people who tried to take their own lives. So I was court committed to a treatment center. And I entered a treatment center in Dallas, Texas on April the 11th of 1977. And I'm so grateful because I've had many, many years in this program. And it just gets better. And those of you who are new, especially the couple on the end, it may seem really crazy, but at 21 years of sobriety, I am busier in this program than I have ever been. I sponsor more people than I have ever sponsored, and I'm into more service than I have ever been into. Because at 21 years of sobriety, I've got a lot to lose today. I've got so much to lose. And I love my life. I absolutely love my life. I love being sober. I love the life I have today. I just love my life. I love what's happened. And believe me, it hasn't been a rose garden, as the old saying goes. So that's the neat thing, is that I've been able to suit up and show up for life for the past 21 years. And that's what I never could do. I never, ever could live my life and just do my thing. And on April the 11th, I began to do my life. And that's the miracle. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, great events will come to pass. That's the great fact for us all. And I want to spend the next few minutes sharing with you my great events that have come to pass. And when I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was married. And it had been, it had been pretty rocky and pretty stormy. It's pretty tough to live with a practicing alcoholic. And I began to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did some things in this program that were just as devastating as what I had done behind alcohol and drugs. And that was behind relationships and sex. I was so desperate You see, I just was still wanting you to make me happy. And I just knew if I could find somebody to love me enough, then I would be happy. And I had to do some devastating things in early sobriety. And maybe it's why I feel the way I feel today, and why I feel so strongly about marriage, and why I feel so strongly about values, and why I feel so strongly about the things that I feel about, because I just know what not having those values and what a terrible price you pay, or what a terrible price I paid for not having those values. And today, I'm so grateful. One of the things that I did, I talked not long ago in my home group at Seal Beach. And one of the things that I said to my group is, I said, you know, one of the things that's really important to me, I get to go and I get to speak across the country at different conferences, and Dave's not always with me. And I just, you know, and one of the things that I promise the people I get sober with, and I promise my husband, is I will be a good example of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I will be a good example of a married, sober woman. Because I believe that this is a program of attraction. And I believe that people judge me by my actions, not my intention. And I want to be a program of attraction, that you can have a marriage in this program, and that you can be faithful and true to that man, and you can act that way no matter where you are. And I'm really grateful for that. I'm so grateful that I have been able to have that and to feel that deep down inside of me. I already know that other side. And that other side makes you feel so bad. And, it, you know, I truly understand if you're guilty, you feel guilty, it's probably because you are. And I definitely was. So today I just believe in just being the best person I can be, because this is a program of attraction. And people can only judge me by my actions. When I was 3 years sober, Dave was living in Salt Lake City. And I was in Fort Worth, and he had been here, and he had lived in Fort Worth and moved here, and he came back. And Dave had known me since I was 6 months sober. And we'd been buddies. We'd been friends. And that's all we had been. And a lot of people thought differently, but that's all we had been, was friends. And Dave looked at me and he said, you know, I just need to let you know that I love you. And I don't know what you're going to do about your marriage. But he says, I want you to know that I love you and I want to marry you, but I absolutely will not have an affair with you. And, you know, those are the kind of things. And here, he knew all about me. And how does something like that happen to a person like me? And Dave was really the first person that loved me unconditionally that I knew, that I could feel, I could truly feel that unconditional love. And with that, in fact, I do some Eastern religion. I like to do some readings. And if you've ever read the Bhagavad Gita, it says that to love another person totally, you get to see the eyes of God. And I believe that. Sometimes we just need to feel that love with someone who has skin on them, just has skin on them. And that began to be the healing for me. And this wonderful man, Frank, he's in the big meeting in the sky, and Frank talked to Dave and I about, you know, being in love and about what we were going to do and when we said we were going to get married. And he says, well, I'll just tell you how to have a really good marriage all the days of your life. And he said, and that's to treat each other like a newcomer. And how do we treat newcomers? With love, patience, and tolerance. And he said, you know, Dave, you and Polly need to plant yourself in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Just like if you were planting two oak trees, and you nurture that with the big book and the 12 steps and with service and meetings and sponsorship. And he says, you just continue to nurture yourself. And he says, you'll grow strong. Those two oak trees will grow strong. And he says, and one day, it's just like if you stood in the middle of those two oak trees, your relationship will be the same. You can look up, and you can't tell where one begins and the other one ends. And 18 years later, I think a lot of that has come to pass. Dave and I have just kind of you know, come together as a couple, and we've learned things through the things that we've been through. And Dave and I, for 16 years, well, he was 16 years sober, and I was 17 years sober. We were married, what, about 11 or 12 years, I guess. And I mean to tell you, it looked like we had the lightest touch. I mean, it was like our lives were just so good. Our kids were straightening up, and things were getting better, and people were, you know, were coming into AA, and all this stuff was happening, and we were, you know, getting to talk around the country, and we were, I mean, it just looked like we had the Midas touch. And lo and behold, Dave got laid off. He got downsized from his job. Well, you know, Dave had gotten jobs before. We weren't that upset about it. You know, it's like, this happens. And then all of a sudden, Dave was not able to find a job. What we found out was the world was not looking for a 57-year-old computer scientist. And things began to get really tough, and we knew that if something didn't happen pretty soon, we would lose our house. And the only thing that Dave could find was he got two jobs, and those two jobs paid minimum wage. That's what a computer scientist could find 5 years ago in California. And we ended up losing our house, and we ended up having to file bankruptcy. And all these things had happened, and it was just like, oh, my God, how can this be happening to me? And Dave will tell you the experience he learned from it. We learned different things from this experience. And that is an experience. It's just an experience that we had that happened to us. I don't think God punished us in any way. I don't think any of that stuff happened. I don't think God did that to us. I think the economy did that to us. I think God brought us through it and carried us all the way. And the amazing thing is that the lessons that were learned along the way, I was angry. I had my fist at God. And what I learned about myself at that amount of sobriety, I would have been 16 years sober. What I learned was, at 16 years of sobriety, I was waiting for God to reward me for being sober. I'm like, how can this be happening to me? I mean, look how many people I sponsor. Look how much service I'm into. I mean, how can this be happening to me? And, you know, sobriety is not a reward. Sobriety is a gift. And the service I do in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and the sponsorship I do those things to be able to keep my gift. That's what I do to be able to have my gift. And I thought I needed to be rewarded for this. And what I learned about is that I was more concerned, because Dave and I were so active and doing things in AA, and I was thinking, well, what will people think? What are people going to think about us if we're in foreclosure and bankruptcy and all this stuff? What are people going to think? So what I had to do, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that the steps and our experiences and this process, the book calls this a process, that we will have a leveling of the pride. And what I got to experience was a leveling of the pride. And my pride got to be leveled, because here I was, 16 years sober, experiencing these hugely humiliating things. But I need to let you know that there's sobriety after bankruptcy and foreclosure and all that stuff, and that you live through it. And I've learned a lot. And the experience for Dave and I has been wonderful, because through this experience, we didn't yell at each other. We didn't mistreat each other. We didn't do this. We were there, and we supported each other. And what happened with our relationship was amazing, and I wouldn't take anything today for the experience. And I'm really grateful. And Dave and I have learned to let each other go. We are as two different a people as you could ever hope to be. The thing that Dave and I have in common is AA. I mean, he's a computer scientist, brain boy, you know, and I can barely speak the English language. And And I mean, it's like he comes from one background and I come from another. And the things we like socially and for pleasure are just this way. Dave, like he loves your state. He loves your state. Because what Dave likes to do is throw a 40-pound pack on his back. And he likes to walk around on the mountains. And he likes to throw ropes up the mountains. And he likes to climb up them or whatever they do. And I have no interest in that. None. First of all, you can't take baths, and I don't do what they do in the woods, and you don't climb mountains because you break your fingernails and skin your knees, and it's just like, great, and I'm so happy he loves to do that, and that he can get in his big red truck and put on his four-wheel drive and go. That's fine. And you've taught us to do that. You've taught us to let each other go be the best they can be. Because I came into these rooms, and when Dave and I got married, I suffered with jealousy so bad because I could hardly let him out of my sight because I was so insecure and I was so jealous. And I felt so inadequate because of these darling little cute skinny young girls I sponsored who just think he's wonderful. And I had all this problem. And today what's so neat is I can just, you go and Dave comes back with me showing me these pictures where they go with the Yosemite Association and they all go up there and they get to the top of a mountain and they go skinny dipping. He didn't even know these people. And I'm like, oh, that's cute. And it's okay. And, you know, that's because we're programmed on Alcoholics Anonymous. And you begin to be able to heal those inadequacies. Those two boys I told you about. When I was 6.5 years sober, my youngest son called me on the phone and he says, Mom, I want what you have. And 6.5 years before, he did not want what I had. 6.5 years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school. And he said, don't you dare show up at my school because I am ashamed of you. And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. James celebrated 14 years of sobriety on January the 3rd. So he's like 14.5 years sober. His wife, Kelly, celebrated 9 years this month. And that's truly a great event that's come to pass. My oldest son needs to be in the rooms of Al-Anon. He went there for a while, desperately needs that program. And I want you to know that I am a grateful member of the rooms of Al-Anon. I have been in Al-Anon for 15 years, and my Al-Anon sponsor is Sally Myers. And I understand that Albert and Sally have been here twice. And she told me to be sure and tell you that she sends her very best. That's been a tough one because Albert was like my dad. And those of you who loved Albert, that was a tough one. But I talked to her every Tuesday, and she knew I was coming this weekend to Salt Lake City. And I'll tell you, a drug addict running Venice Beach running kid will certainly drive you to the rooms of Al-Anon, or else it'll drive you crazy. What are the two? I found Al-Anon to be the easier, softer way. But my oldest son was one of these people that had this depression and this desperation inside of him. And I really understood, Russ, because that's what had happened with me. And I understood what it's like to cut yourself up, because if you did that, it didn't hurt so bad emotionally. And I understood that. And I just could hardly stand it because my son continued to try to take his life. And I was so devastated by all of that because you know, people in Alcoholics Anonymous would tell me, turn him over, turn him over. And you know, hindsight is beautiful. It's just 20/20. Because now I know why I couldn't release my son. It's because I was afraid to release him. I was afraid that God would take him. And I just couldn't let go. But you know, when the student's ready, the teacher arrives. And I was doing something like I'm doing tonight, except I was in Georgia. And I did it on a Saturday morning, and my daughter-in-law had called me on the phone the night before telling me my son had put a pair of scissors in his stomach. And I was just devastated, and I just didn't know if I could talk or not. And the next day after I got through talking, this man walked up to me, and he said, young lady, you and I need to talk. And we need to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we need to read the chapter to the agnostic. And you need to know that God either is or He isn't. He is either all things or He's nothing. And what God does with His kids is none of your business. And with that man's help, I was able to release my son. My son has not hurt himself in 8 years. That is really a great event that's come to pass. Now last night, I have these two little granddaughters. And every time I look at those two little girls, I think, oh, how grateful I am that Russ didn't do the things he wanted to do to himself. Because we have, Jesse is just a month old, but Katie is almost two. And I mean, she just sees day and night. She's got those arms out and she's just running as hard as she can, as hard as she can to us. And every time I look at her, I think, oh, how grateful I am. How grateful I am because I could have missed that. I could have missed that. And it's such a gift. It's such a precious, precious gift. My son James and Kelly have the little boy named Ryan, my little 5-year-old grandson. And I can tell you, I had my fist at God and Dave got laid off and all. But when Ryan was 18 months old, we found out that Ryan was profoundly deaf. And I want you to know I had my fist at God. I just couldn't believe that this was happening to us. And one more time, it's how can this be happening? Don't you see how much service I am? Don't you see how many, again, like I'm supposed to, you know, like I just don't want to suit up and show up for life one more time. And how my perception of reality was so distorted, having no idea what this little boy was going to bring to us. And I just wish you could see James and Kelly and what you have done for them and what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has done for them. Because, you know, if you have a child who has special needs, it takes a lot. You know, kids with no special needs are just about, what an order, I can't go through with it. But a child with a special need just takes so much energy and so much time. And these kids have been so relieved of the bondage of self that it never costs too much, it never takes too much, they just do it. They just got back from a whole week camp where families who have, you know, are deaf or have a deaf child, where they went for a whole week just so they continue to integrate this little boy into the deaf community. We got to go to school and learn sign language and all that good stuff. And I mean, the miracle. Now, this happened about a little over 2 years ago. And I know that none of you feel this way, but I was asked to speak at this place in Rancho Cucamonga, which is like an hour and a half from where I live, that I have to drive up to Rancho Cucamonga. I don't want to go up there. I have to get up at 5. I don't want to go to the meeting. People are going to be smoking and can't even breathe in there and all this stuff. But, you know, I've been taught, just get in the car. Just get in the car. It's who cares how you feel? Just go. Just take the action. Put your feelings aside. So I got in the car and I went up to Rancho Cucamonga. And this guy came up to me and he said, I don't know what we're going to do. This lady is here. She only has 4 days of sobriety and she's deaf and she can't read lips. I was like, it's okay, Mike. I signed. And I was able to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to this lady. And you know, I never knew I was going to be able to do that. I never.